The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
This could be five. It's a goal. Firmino has two and Liverpool have five. It's another thrashing of Porto in their own stadium.
So Porto dismantled and can Liverpool do a job on Pep's Man City? That's what we all want to know. It's the Red Agenda. We're going to talk about James Milner, Curtis Jones, and also reflect on the passing of one of the greats, Sir Roger Hunt. James Pearce and Kiefer O'Neill, alongside myself, Steve Hothersall. And I suppose, James, it doesn't get much bigger than a home clash against Manchester City. It's pretty much the gauge which we can look at the season from.
Yeah, I think we've probably seen enough already this season to know they are the two best teams in the Premier League. They've been competing for the biggest prizes in recent years, and I think it's all set up to be another really mouthwatering battle between them. I think obviously it was a big win for City, wasn't it? Coming to Anfield last season, I think hadn't won at Anfield in 18 years. But as Pep Guardiola said himself afterwards, it's different winning at Anfield with and without fans. And that lack of atmosphere played into City's hands last time. And I think this time around, it will certainly be very different surroundings for them.
Yeah, Kiefer, I'm thinking if you go back to last season, there's no way that scoreline happens if Anfield is full.
No, absolutely not. You kind of felt it coming a lot of times last season just from watching on the telly, because you knew fans weren't there to get on the players' backs. And, these games, particularly Man City, Liverpool at Anfield, are always, the first 15 minutes kind of sets the tone of the game. And for the most part, Liverpool have been able to absolutely boss it in that time, lay down a real marker with the crowd behind them. And they weren't really able to do that last season. I feel like they'll be able to do that this weekend. And that's where they'll get joy, if they can get, where it feels like they're just going to score goals and goals and goals. And, at the minute, they are scoring goals. If you look back at last month, they scored, three goals in every game at least. There's plenty of goals in this side. They had that little blip defensively against Brentford. You've seen against Porto how frustrated Joel Matip and Virgil van Dijk were to give up the clean sheet. They both did the exact same sort of throwing their arms around, like, absolutely fuming about it. They'll be keen on doing that. I guess it's scoring against Manchester City, which you think would be the worry. They haven't conceded many this season. It took Messi an absolute worldie, didn't it? Every goal Messi scores is a worldie. But Liverpool are going to have to be on their absolute A game. And I think they've been showing that they're coming into that now, particularly when pressing. They just seem the more alive to the danger, to the ball, to what Jürgen Klopp's instructing them to do. And I think that bodes really well going into Sunday's big game.
James, you would imagine that both these sides aren't going to lose too many games this season. I suppose that sort of plays into this, if you like, in the sense of how much does a win mean?
Yeah, well, I think clearly it's too early in the season to read a huge amount into the outcome on Sunday. But I think what we do know is that winning a game like this can give you massive belief going forward and have a knock-on effect. And similarly, if it goes badly wrong, I think it can be a painful one to shake off. Especially, it always feels like it means that much more as well going into an international break, because you know that whatever happens, that there's no way of getting it out of your system for a fortnight. It will linger, whether that's a positive or a negative feeling. It's obviously there's been a lot of talk this season about whether Chelsea, on the back of winning the Champions League and the money they've spent in the summer, whether they would be either favourites or certainly in the mix for the title. The same with United, but I think from what we've seen this season, I see it as a straight shootout between Liverpool and City. And yeah, certainly if you can, you know, what Liverpool are a point ahead of them at the moment, if they could stretch that to four, then you know, that would be huge.
That's really intriguing what you're saying there. I wonder whether Kiva agrees with that as well. Obviously, Chelsea have had two blips, lost to Juventus in the Champions League, lost to Manchester City. Do you think Chelsea aren't quite the real deal, won't quite keep the pace with the other two?
Well, it certainly hasn't been a good week for them, has it? You know, I think they'll start, their fans will have a little bit of a question mark on the back of their mind, and as will other fans as well. Just can they go all the way? Because I think they started the season, you know, like James says, on the back of that, riding the wave of that Champions League win, brought in Lukaku, and everyone was kind of worried about what had happened there. He struggled a little bit in the last couple of games. I mean, he's going to score plenty of goals for them, but whether that will be enough overall to see them, you know, win the Premier League title, it probably could be. But like James says, it does feel like this weekend is sort of focused on Liverpool City. I feel like everyone now is sort of feeling that way. Even Man United, I mean, you know, I haven't caught a little bit of them last night in the Champions League. Obviously, Ronaldo pops up with a late winner, just always the way, isn't it, I guess?
But they've been scruffy this season, haven't they, some of their results?
They didn't impress against Villarreal, and, yeah, you know, they've lost to Aston Villa at the weekend, and there have been plenty of results for them, which, you know, haven't boded well. Young boys in the Champions League, where they have looked not the best, so I don't think they can go the distance. But, you know, with Ronaldo dragging them there, you just don't know, do you, I guess? But, yeah, I think, you know, Liverpool are definitely one of the front runners along with Man City, which is incredible to think that no one really had Liverpool pegged as title contenders going into the season, which still baffles me a little bit because, you know, they've got that same squad there. Yeah, they didn't add too many players to it, just the one, but, you know, they're still champions in that team. And, you know, even with injuries to midfield, it's, you know, things are looking quite positive, aren't they?
Yeah, it's really strange. It's like the rest of the country all of a sudden woke up to it. Let's have a look at the team selection for the Liverpool-Man City game. And I think we know that Trent Alexander-Arnold will be out and James Milner will play at right back. You've written about the qualities of the man on The Athletic, James. At the age of, what, 36, there's still no stopping James.
Yeah, I thought he was immense again the other night against Porto. You know, just as he was in keeping Wilfried Zaha quiet when he was thrown in at short notice against Palace a couple of weeks ago. So not quite 36, Steve. He will be later on in the season.
Is he 35? Sorry, James.
Still clinging on to 35 at the moment. I wish I was too. He's just been a remarkable servant to Liverpool, hasn't he? When you think this is his seventh season, I think when you think of all the players Liverpool have signed in that time, you know, the number of times people have just assumed, well, that's it, you know, Milner will now just disappear into the background. You know, he's no longer of great importance, maybe off the pitch rather than on it. But, you know, you look at the calibre of the performances he puts in, and I think with Milner, there is such a big focus on, you know, this big vocal presence, his leadership, his nous, his know-how, his game management, that sometimes what doesn't get talked about enough of it is his quality, because you know, it's hard enough mastering one position at the highest level, let alone four, five or six, which is what he's done. Because you know, I'm sure the irony won't be lost on him that, what was it, you know, over 6 years ago now, he left Man City for Liverpool after talks with Brendan Rodgers, because Rodgers had, you know, assured him that, you know, you will be an integral part as a central midfielder here. That was where he wanted to play. He felt like he wasn't ever really appreciated at City despite the success he had there, because you know, he was always moved around. He felt like he was, you know, if the manager had a tough decision, it always felt like he was the one that was left out or had to try and fill in somewhere. Yet, you know, of course, he hasn't really been able to shake off, you know, that tag as of Mr. Versatile, because, you know, he had nearly a whole season under Klopp as a left back. You know, when you look at the numbers, I think it's only around 50% of his total games for Liverpool have been played in that, what you'd associate with him as the centre midfielder. You know, he's been on the left, he's been on the right, obviously both sides as a fullback, he's played as a holding midfielder. So yeah, he's a remarkable athlete, And, you know, what an absolute blessing it is for Klopp to be able to call upon him, because, you know, I must admit, you know, the other night I was thinking, you know, when you look at how creative Trent has been, you think, are Liverpool really going to be able to, you know, to create a massive amount tonight without him? But I think when Milner steps up like that, and, you know, other players as well, you know, to fill the void, it doesn't really give you that sense of trepidation going into the City game.
I think it's fascinating that he moved over and, you know, went from that Manchester City ship where he could have easily stayed, Kiever, and just taken the money, but actually saw a bigger picture at an age which maybe few people might have tried that. And actually, his age is bizarre because you don't really think he's 35 when you're watching him.
No, and it does surprise me that, you know, this could be his last season. You feel like somehow from somewhere he'll pluck another year contract. Surely, you know, he's going to go on forever, isn't he? And when he doesn't, that'll be a sad day for all of us. And I've said in the past, you know, if he does continue playing and it's not at Liverpool, then, you know, when he finishes up there, then he has to definitely come back and be a coach at Liverpool. I don't know why, you know, the club wouldn't want to get him straight in to coach, because, I mean, he's pretty much a coach now. Over the past few seasons, he's been, you know, a great voice for the younger players. You've seen in those, you know, League Cup and FA Cup games where he was helping out and stuff. So, you know, he's so much more important to Liverpool than even what he does on the pitch, and that versatility, you know, off it and away from it. He's alongside Jordan Henderson, as, you know, obviously he's the vice captain, but he's, you know, someone crucial to this football club and to the success, you know, Jürgen Klopp and his and the other players have enjoyed over the past few seasons. He's just incredible. I mean, we can talk all day about him. I think, you know, he sets the tone. And I mean, from the Crystal Palace game, when, you know, you think the only couple of yellow cards he was against Zaha, was it? Or, and then, you know, how he didn't pick up a yellow card in that game just baffled me. And then to go into, you know, to filling in at right back is just, it's incredible, isn't it, really, what he's doing? And he does it, like, as one of the best. You know, he's covering for one of the best in the world, and he does it looking like one of the best in the world. So, I mean, we can't say much more on him. He's just, yeah, a superhuman.
Absolutely. It looks like it's going to be Grealish up against James Milner. That'll be fascinating. Let's look at the midfield. And if Liverpool can replicate anything from the Porto game, James, it's that dominance, the pressing, the ability to control the midfield, which largely came from Curtis Jones, who's absolutely grabbed his opportunity.
Yeah, it was an astonishing performance, I thought, when you think for a player that's been on the fringes, really, for quite a while. Certainly, you know, the back end of last season, you know, his opportunities dried up a bit. And then, you know, this summer, having to kind of sit and watch as Harvey Elliott lit the place up and you know, clearly circumstances have handed him, you know, an opportunity that maybe he wasn't expecting, with, you know, of course, the injuries to Elliott and to Thiago, and obviously Keita only just coming back as well. But yeah, you know, you've still got to grasp it. And, you know, I was blown away. I thought he was good against Brentford. You know, of course, you know, it was a shame that he was denied what would have been a really fitting winning goal in that game. But he went to another level altogether against Porto. You know, he was involved in all five goals. I just love his confidence on the ball, in terms of he's always looking to make something happen. And he gave Liverpool's midfield that kind of real creative spark that maybe as supporters we feared had kind of been lost with the Elliott injury. And yeah, just so positive and direct when he gets on the ball. Even the first goal, where, you know, I think there was a big focus on, you know, Diogo Costa had an absolute stinker, didn't he, in goal for Porto. But I think he was caught out by just how early Curtis took that shot on. You know, he was such quick feet, and the execution was so impressive. And, you know, and I think, you know, listening to Klopp afterwards, the other thing that really delighted his manager was his work off the ball. And, you know, we saw that with the way that he pressed and won the ball back in the build-up to Mo Salah's second goal. Because, I think there has been a few pointed comments about, you know, the big thing for Curtis from Klopp it has been consistency. That's what he wants to see from him. And, you know, it certainly felt like that is the benchmark. You know, if he can get close to that on a regular basis, then you know he simply can't be left out of the Liverpool team.
Imagine the scenario. A much-loved and inspirational leader has announced his intention to take a career break, and you need to find someone just as tactically astute and charismatic, but perhaps without the glasses and the teeth. Well, when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else, and LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Hiring is simple when you have that many quality candidates. So simple, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They've even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even quicker. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/walk. That's linkedin.com/walk. WLK to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Before injuries to Naby, to Harvey Elliott, was there a concern of actually where he was, Kiefer, in the pecking order? I mean, now we're seeing him play, we're thinking, well, he has to play every game. But is the reality that he's actually got his chance because of those injuries?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he did sort of start the season, well, pre-season was, you know, he looked good, didn't he? And was going into the season in a better place than he sort of ended the last season, whereas, you know, his appearances sort of dried up a little bit, didn't they, after March, where, you know, last season he was the go-to man for Klopp many times. You know, there was a couple of times when he came off and then Liverpool ended up losing the game because they'd sort of lost their energy almost through him. So I think, you know, the concussion wasn't helpful to start the season. That sort of rocked him a bit. Then, as James said, Harvey Elliott steps up, even, you know, on the right side. I mean, it scares me, the thought of Harvey playing on that right of midfield and Curtis on the left. You know, the future of Liverpool's midfield almost could be absolutely frightening, couldn't it? But yeah, I think what's impressed me about Curtis is that, I guess, you know, he has climbed that pecking order that he did sort of drop down a little bit. And, you know, I think he has gone under the radar a bit. And that performance, you know, to have made over 50 appearances for Liverpool and for people to not really massively notice away from sort of the Liverpool football community, I guess, you know, other supporters would be like, when did that happen? But yeah, for him to just, you know, continue to keep working at it and, you know, those close to him told me that he's so competitive. He wants to play every single minute. Like, he's just obsessed with playing for Liverpool and he'll do anything to do that. So, you know, this is a young, hungry player. I found it really interesting how Klopp sort of sets him up on that left, because obviously you've got to, with Liverpool, do your pressing and your defensive work. So he sort of seems to stay quite central when Liverpool are out of possession. And then when they're in possession, he sort of then shifts over to the left and sort of zooms forward with the pace he's got. And I think that's been the missing link for Liverpool's midfield for a long time. You know, a player who we saw with Harvey Elliott that can just attack. And, you know, I tweeted the other night, he's a trouble causer. His shot obviously helped with that goal. But against Brentford, you know, his shots were causing trouble as well. And I think that's what, you know, Liverpool definitely need, and I think he's going to go on to have hopefully a great season.
Yeah, what a player. Look, against Brentford, James, Liverpool came undone defensively, shipped goals. They obviously hadn't previously in the season. Heading into a game against Manchester City has to be tight again, doesn't it? What's your thoughts and perspective on Virgil van Dijk and how much football he's had to play since coming back from a 10-month layoff?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, I think it was really interesting the fact that Klopp only made the one change the other night. I thought, you know, I wondered whether we might have seen Konate, whether he might have rotated a bit more than he did. But I think listening to his comments, he felt, I think there's probably two factors. One, that he felt there was like enough of a gap between Tuesday and Sunday, recovery-wise, not to have to rest anyone ahead of City. But also, I think he felt that the Brentford game was an aberration, that wasn't representative of where these players are at, certainly not defensively as a unit, because that's been such a strength for Liverpool this season. And he almost wanted those players who had collectively had such an off night against Brentford to put things right, to kind of get back on track. And I think that kind of decision definitely paid off. In terms of Van Dijk, I thought there was a bit of an overreaction to what happened at Brentford, because, you know, for a start, you have to bear in mind that, you know, Van Dijk has been out for a long, long time. So it's just impossible to just flick a switch and just for him to get back to where he was before the injury. I also thought he wasn't a weak link in that Liverpool team. I thought if anything out of the two, it was Matip that got bullied a bit and lost a lot of the aerial battles, because Brentford did go very direct. But no, I think Van Dijk has been unbelievable so far this season. But when you think about how long he was out, just how serious the injury was, and it's no surprise that with the exception of that Milan game that he's been out there for every important clash that's come along. So I just thought. Do you know what? Credit to Brentford. They threw caution to the wind on the day. They got numbers forward. They had a go at Liverpool in a way that few teams do. And it doesn't really fill me with any concern going into the City game. Because also, we know from the way City play, it's just a very, very different type of test. You know, they're not going to... Pep Guardiola is not going to get them to stick three men on the back post and launch high balls in. It's just a different challenge. And... I think the only real dilemma for Klopp ahead of Sunday, as long as there's no late fitness issues, will be whether it's Firmino or Jota, because I think that's probably a decision to be made on the back of Firmino scoring a couple of goals the other night. But apart from that, I think Van Dijk and Matip are absolutely nailed on to start.
Where do you two go with Firmino or Jota then, Kiva?
I think you start Firmino just because he seems to have that little impact. When he comes on as a sub, having the injury coming back now, I feel like you just need to start. He looks good. And Jota, I feel like he really, really needed a goal the other night, didn't he? It was kind of like Mane against Leeds. You felt like if it didn't come, it might disrupt the games to follow. But he's another class footballer. And it would not surprise me for him to put Liverpool ahead against Man City with a kind of header or something that he did against Brentford. So I don't know if it's probably not one for all four of them, but you don't know, do you, I guess. But Firmino just gets starting orders for what he did against Porto in midweek and what Jota failed to do, I guess. I thought his all-round performance was good, but that was a game where you should really be getting involved with the goals. And he's had a few of those moments this season. Raya produced an outstanding save for the shot that hit the post, Jones's shot, and Jota wasn't quite able to get it in. World class stop, but it's moments like that sometimes this season that Jota's just failed to find that cutting edge. But he's gonna score plenty of goals for Liverpool, isn't he? And it would not surprise me at all for him to score against Manchester City and turn up. But then Firmino does like himself a game against Man City, so I've just got a good feeling for him.
What are we thinking? A tight one, James? A really, I would say, cautious affair, but given Manchester City's defence as well, which again was the backbone of their title winning campaign last season, how's this going to play out on Sunday?
I think it's incredibly difficult to predict. I think, both teams in general have been very tight defensively so far this season, haven't they? Which would lead you to think that one goal, could well decide it. But I don't know. I think with a game like this, you just think maybe if someone was to score early, then that almost changes it. And I think the big thing for Liverpool is they have to start well. They have to impose themselves on City from the start. They have to do something which they didn't do at Burnley. At Brentford last weekend, in terms of being ready and grasping the initiative and not giving their opponents a head start, which is what happened at Brentford. I think that's the big thing, because we know Anfield will be absolutely electric on Sunday afternoon. I'm glad it's later on in the day rather than a lunchtime kickoff. And I'm sure we've seen it before when you think of some of the the fantastic wins Liverpool have had against City, you know, since Klopp has been there, against Guardiola. You know, it has been about feeding off that tempo and intensity, you know, the energy from the stands, and you know, almost leaving Man City a bit shell-shocked with that ability to score goals in quick succession and just not allow City to settle. Because we know with just how technically gifted, you know, so many of City's footballers are, that if you stand off them, if you let them play, then, you know, you're causing yourself massive problems.
Just a slight diversion onto something, Kiva, which is the club's senior players committee. So Jurgen mentioned this in his press conference the other day. Obviously, Jordan Henderson, Virgil van Dijk, James Milner, senior players already on the board, if you like. But he basically led us into the knowledge that the players then voted to invite a few others onto this board, this senior players committee. Trent being one of those. What about the roles and what it means? What do you think? Six senior players now.
Yeah, it's very intriguing, isn't it? I don't know too much about it. I'm sure James has got more of an idea than I have on it. But I think those types of things are, you know, the bedrock of success, aren't they? That's what you need, almost like it's politics, you know, to have leaders in control and in power, even though, you know, the whole team is kind of built on the same fundamentals. But yeah, it's massively intriguing for him to have just dropped that in there and left us all sort of scrambling, wondering what. I know obviously the players have voted in the past on who to be captain, vice-captain, that kind of thing, and there's sort of a pecking order there. And I feel like there's probably that at a lot of teams, but it's never quite sort of, you know, outlined as such. So it does intrigue me whether they go for little meals or something and, you know, have little discreet discussions away, little weekend away for the seniors.
Who are the other two that I've missed there, James? So Trent's one of the new ones, and the other two are
Robertson and Alisson. Yeah. Right. So yeah,
it just demonstrates how many captains they've got, doesn't it?
Yeah. Especially when you think, you know, Mo Salah not amongst that, you know, that six-man committee yet. You know, he's captain of Egypt and someone who publicly said that he was quite peeved at not being given the Liverpool captaincy for that game against Midland in the Champions League dead rubber last season. So I think, you know, when you think, you know, Sadio Mane as well, Fabinho, you know, there would have been a whole host of contenders. And I think, you know, it was interesting listening to Klopp saying that, you know, the decision to expand it from four to six was essentially because, you know, of the, you know, the injury situation last season, where sometimes he was going into games without anyone on that committee actually being in contention to feature. So it's something that obviously, I think, with the way that Klopp operates, clearly he is the main man. He makes the big decisions. You know, he sticks by them. But I think he wants everyone to feel as if they do have an input in that process. And I think in the same way that, you know, the coaching staff talk about, you know, with Klopp, you don't just get, you know, asked for your opinion. You get, you know, it's demanded from you. He wants your input. It's the same with the senior players, you know, whether that's, you know, on training times or travel plans, or whatever, you know, in terms of preparation for games, you know, recovery from games. You know, I know in the last kind of 18 months, you know, a big thing has been, you know, allowing players to do kind of first day recovery at home rather than having to traipse into the training ground for recovery. So, you know, little things like that. I think, you know, it's all part of the way that Klopp bosses things. You know, I think it's a big strength of his, the fact that he wants to listen, he wants to take other people's opinions on board. But, you know, ultimately, he has the final say.
Intriguing stuff, isn't it? Let's finish with a word on the majestic, the great Sir Roger Hunt. He was at Anfield between 1958 and 1969. 285 goals, two First Division titles, member of the first FA Cup winning side, and, of course, scored in that game. Second in the all-time top scorers list, but he is the record holder for league goals for Liverpool. Kiva, I would imagine, obviously, you know, you didn't see him play. You probably learnt an awful lot about the greatness of this man in the past week.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you sort of grow up anyway. Just, I remember seeing, I think, the banner on the cop, Sir Roger, and I remember going away thinking, what? And then I realised, oh, that's the one my granddad always goes on about. And I haven't even had a chance to speak to my granddad yet, but I'm sure he's got some great stories about Roger Hunt scoring plenty of goals for Liverpool. You know, just really sad news. I think, you know, you've seen the outpouring from a lot of ex-players, fans who had the, you know, the chance to meet him and just said, you know, what an incredible footballer he was. Many of us didn't get to see him play, but what a gentleman he was as well, obviously. Just really sad news. One of the legends of this football club, you know, someone who built it, you know, and set up what we're enjoying now. So without those people who came before, I mean, none of this can happen, can it? And, you know, Sir Roger Hunt's definitely among those legends of Liverpool Football Club and will remain there forevermore.
James, I think it was Kenny Dalglish who put on his social media that he was fortunate enough to stand on the shoulders of giants, and by that he obviously meant Sir Roger and what he did alongside Bill Shankly and Ian St John for that football club.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Liverpool Football Club that we have today, you know, wouldn't be that worldwide iconic famous institution without the people like Roger Hunt. You know, he was, you know, one of the founding fathers really in terms of launching the club into the big time, into winning the biggest prizes, you know, such an integral part of that iconic Bill Shankly team. And, you know, the service he gave Liverpool over so many years, you know, to get them promoted back into the top division, you know, win two top flight titles, you know, that cherished FA Cup for the first time in 65 as well. And when you think about, you know, what he achieved on the international stage as well with being part of the 66 World Cup winning team, yeah, it was, and you know, it was funny because, you know, obviously I never got to see him play, but you know, clearly he was one of those names that you just, you know, growing up as a young Liverpool fan, you just, you know, you almost had to be educated about what he'd done, because everyone, the older generation, always talked about him. You know, even when, you know, the number of interviews, you know, I've done with former players, like, you know, you speak to John Aldridge and Phil Thompson and people like this, people that are legends in their own right. Well, they were inspired by Roger Hunt. You know, he was their hero. You know, John Aldridge spoke the other day, didn't he, about, you know, wanting to, you know, he always wore number 8 because he wanted to wear the same number as Roger Hunt. And I was lucky enough to meet him on a number of occasions. You know, one of the first interviews I did for the Echo probably 15 years ago was to go and interview him. And you know, he was working for the Pools panel at the time, and just incredibly down to earth and humble. You know, just a world away from how you might imagine someone who had achieved what he'd achieved would be. But yeah, I think, you know, I've never ever heard anyone say a single bad word about Roger Hunt, and he deserves all the plaudits and all the tributes that have come his way, because just up there with the absolute, you know, the icons of Liverpool Football Club, and, you know, an incredibly lovely man as well.
Yeah, Jurgen said second to no one at Liverpool Football Club, and sadly missed now, Sir Roger Hunt. My thanks as always to Kiva and to James. That was the Red Agenda. Hope you enjoyed it. And of course, there's another one next week after that nail biter against Manchester City at the weekend. Fingers crossed we get the result we're after. We'll see you then.